is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Lou Aronica. He's a publisher, author, editor, and I guess that pretty much covers at least some of the things that Lou does. How are you, Lou?
I'm fine, David. How are you?
Good. So before we talk about what you're doing now, which is, I think, the main subject or primary subject that I wanted to talk to you about, maybe you could just give a little background story of how you got into the book business in the first place and how you got to the place where you are today.
Sure. Yeah, I got into the publishing end of the business in 1979, intending only to stick around for a couple of years and figure out how it worked before I started writing. And as it turned out, I got a clerical job at Bantam and just became fascinated with the industry right away. And only a couple of years after that, I started hanging out with Ian Ballantyne, who I assume most of your listeners know, founded Bantam Books and founded Ballantyne Books and introduced paperback, mass market paperbacks to the U.S. And once that happened, I was just sort of locked in because, you know, he was just such an incredible source of history of the business. And he essentially, taught me what I know about the industry. And now that was pretty exciting stuff. So I decided to just keep going at it. And I spent 14 years at Bantam. I was mass market publisher and then deputy publisher. And I left there in 93 for a very short stint as publisher of Berkeley. And then I left there in 95 to become publisher of Avon. And I stayed there until Avon was sold to News Corp. And then all the changes involved my moving on. And at that point, I just decided, I'd done the publishing thing. I'd done 20 years in that side of the publishing business, and I just decided that it was time to try the writing thing. That was the goal all along. And so I spent most of the next decade working on that end, and I've published 16 books at this point, both fiction and nonfiction. I've had a New York Times bestseller on the nonfiction side. I've had a national bestseller on the fiction side, and a few years ago, I just decided that I really wanted to get back into publishing, but I wanted to do it at a completely different scale. I didn't have any interest in doing corporate publishing again. I love the publishing business, but I don't love the business of publishing or the business inside of publishing. And going to budget meetings and doing all that stuff held no appeal. So I decided to do something completely different and start an independent publishing operation, and then I've liked that enough to want to do it again, so I started another one, and that sort of brings us up to date.
Well, so let's talk about this most recent one, which is called The Fiction Studio, obviously people can go to your website so they can see what you have to say about it there, but maybe you could talk a little bit about what your vision is for The Fiction Studio and why you have chosen to take the path that The Fiction Studio does, which is principally to do ebooks as the primary publication.
Well, the great thing about, the thing that was always daunting, when I first left Avon, my first thought was that I would start a publishing house. And I spent, several months putting business plan together and had a really good vision for a publishing house, but it required an enormous amount of money to get off the ground. And it just seemed so overwhelming and the risks seemed so high that I ultimately decided that I didn't want to do that. What happened with the digital business is that, all of the things that have weighed on publishers in terms of cost have essentially gone away. You don't have to make the books. You don't take the books back. You don't have to distribute the books. You don't have to pay to put the books in the stores. All of the things that were so incredibly costly about physical book publication didn't exist in digital book publication. And that really synced up with what my real passion is, which is, you know, developing fiction. You know, I'm a gigantic fiction fan, you know, a very, very, you know, wide range of interests, from, you know, very commercial stories to very experimental stories. And I love publishing fiction, and it had become burdensome to attempt to publish fiction in the print world because it just didn't fit with the book-selling model that was out there. And, you know, when digital started to really come of age, and that, you know, we really saw the numbers spike in the fall of last year, it became clear to me that I could do a digital-first publishing program that really was dedicated to doing what I love to do the most, which is developing novelists.
And I want to ask you about that, because I think this is very important as a differentiator. You know, I think that the general understanding is that, if, you know, and this may not have been totally, this not be the only way that fiction was published commercially over the last 40 or 50 years, but there generally was, in many parts of the business, a commitment to developing writers rather than just simply publishing a single book.
There, absolutely.
The publisher or the editor in particular tended to align with a particular writer or a particular number of writers. You know, this goes back, I think this kind of model began only in the 20s, the 1920s,
right,
and continued really only, I would say, into the 90s, maybe mm-hmm. even not even into the 90s widely.
Started to break down in the 90s.
Yeah, and so, what you know, you've got this 75-year period where there was an alignment both in the sense of the publishing business aligned with the notion of writers having an arc in their work. And I don't want to just say career, but just in the actual work itself.
Right.
That if you looked at the first book that a writer did, you would be able to not only see an improvement in the work, but an increase in the number of books sold through the combined efforts of the author and publisher.
Right.
Now, this is, again, not a perfect model. It's not a model that worked in every situation or every
Certainly.
House, but it's one that you ascribe to as a value. And I think that's what you've done differently. That I don't know of anybody else doing this, although I'm sure there are people, and I would invite people who know other ventures doing this to let me know. But if, I think that you are doing something different than most other digital publishers are doing, even in the sense that you've made a conscious and overt commitment to this concept of developing a writer in the fiction studio, which is, I think that's very different than
well,
the common use.
Well, it is, and I think that's, I think it might become less uncommon as the market grows, but I think what you're seeing in digital publishing, or have been seeing in digital publishing, is, you know, sort of two things. I mean, sort of opportunism, which is just, you know, grab as much as you can right now, and dumping, take 40 books by a writer and put them all out at the same time and see what happens. But, you know, the reason why I always held true to that model, and, you know, frankly, it's the only one that I really understand, you know, which is to, you know, invest in a writer's career rather than investing in an individual book, is because I truly believe that's the way it works with the reader. And, you know, and it makes sense when the publisher, the writer, and the reader are also sort of have the same mission. You know, readers, it takes a while for a large group of readers to find a particular writer. And you can attempt to artificially rush an audience to an author, but often that fails, and when it fails, you know, there's damage done to the writer and to the publisher and actually even to the audience in some cases. I mean, I'm thinking of a writer right now, and I'm not going to name his name, but my eyes landed on one of his books, who was sort of hoisted up by his publisher very early in his career and has never recovered from that because it didn't work at the level that the publisher claimed it was going to work, and it really did a tremendous amount of damage to him. So the goal behind the fiction studio program was exactly as you're saying, which was to say, you know, we're here for this author's career, you know, not necessarily for the length of the author's career, but for several books in this author's career, and that we're going to do things with an eye toward developing that writer over several books, as opposed to as opposed to trying to make as much as we possibly can on this book, and if it doesn't work, walking away. One of the things that every author on the Fiction Studio list knows is that they're on the list because I love what they're doing. The only editorial definition of this program is these are books that I really like, and they're authors that I really like. And when I make that kind of commitment, I'm really, assuming that it's going to take a little time for the author to find, the heart of their market. And these writers know that I'm there for several books. And I think that makes a huge difference in terms of how one goes about doing one's business, that you don't try to extend yourself beyond what's realistic in the first publication or even in the second publication, but you plan to look at benchmarks and to grow based on those benchmarks. And some of that involves use of promotion, at different times, use of, spending money at different times, depending on what you're seeing from the early results. But it's absolutely true that all of these writers are people who I plan to keep publishing.
So, and just as a mechanical issue, is this, do you feel like this is a thing you need to make contracts about, or do you feel like it's essentially going to be run as proof is in the pudding, that as long as you and that writer are working well together, they're going to keep working with you and you're going to keep working with them, or do you feel like you have to protect yourself with a contractual arrangement that gives you the option to keep on working with an author?
I don't with the Fiction Studio, because I feel like, I have contracts with every writer because you have to have contracts, but I don't have a contract that says, there's no option clause in the Fiction Studio contract.
Right. No, that's what I was asking.
And for exactly that reason, because I feel like, if they think that it really makes sense to be someplace else, then they probably should be. And I don't feel that that's, I don't feel that that's the nature of the relationship that we have. So I'm completely open to just doing it on a title by title basis. I have made one multi book deal here so far, but I already have multiple contracts with individual writers on the list because we both think that what we're doing makes sense.
Right. No, and I guess, I'm not trying to put you on the spot in that way, just sort of curiosity. But I think it's, the relationship between author and editor can also change over time. Or,
sure.
The relationship between author and publisher can change. It works in both directions, because sometimes authors want to change the direction they want to go in, and the publisher editor may disagree, and it may just turn out not to work out. You're not joined at the hip. You're not married, for till death do you part. But, it seems like you've made an unusual commitment in today's publishing environment.
Well, and I think that's something that has to change. Not for me, for other people. I think that it's very, very difficult. One of the things that I found just unbelievably frustrating to hear as a writer over that decade where I was focusing mostly on writing was, well, we've got to wait to see how the first book does before we can do a second book. And my history as a publisher and my understanding of the marketplace really suggested that wasn't the appropriate way to go. That you weren't going to learn enough in the first few months after a publication to know whether you should be in business with that writer or not, that you didn't know already. What you should know before you put the first book on sale is whether you think the writer has the goods. And if you really believe that, then there isn't a whole lot of reason to consider what happens in the first few months of the author's first book to tell the story. And we can point to dozens of writers who started with very small sales And if you really, and you know, if those publishers had just decided, well, you know, that's, you know, we, you know, the first book didn't do very well, we're going to have to move on, you know, then the enormous audiences those writers have now wouldn't exist for those writers. And so, you know, my feeling is that, you know, with the freedom that digital offers, and I think this is the other huge difference is, you know, there it's not simply that publishers became crasser over the years, but that the model that evolved in physical bookstore publishing became such that it was much, much harder for them to do this kind of developmental publishing. But on the digital side, that's not true at all. I mean, reality is it doesn't cost you very much to publish a digital book. And therefore, it doesn't, you know, the level of risk involved in committing to publish multiple books by a writer is not particularly high.
Well, so, but that raises a really important question I think we should talk about. And that is, if it is true that the cost of publishing a book is relatively low, then the question is, and this is not a theoretical question, I think I've heard it from authors themselves, what do I need a publisher for is the natural question. Because if the you can't look at it as just that the publishers were the bank. Publishers provide other services as well. But most of the services that publishers have provided can be purchased as services by authors. So the question is, if it is true that it's not that difficult for authors to publish, then you've got to figure out what is the value add that an author, I mean, that a publisher provides.
Right.
So the question is, what's the, and it's not enough to just say editorial, obviously, because again, you can hire editors.
Yeah, so, and there are a lot of great freelance editors out there.
That's right. So I put the question to you because I'm sure authors will ask you this question. Regardless of what you charge me, what is it that you are bringing that is unique and special that means you will do something for me that I can't do for myself?
Well, I think it comes down to two things. I think there are writers who should publish themselves. You know, there are writers who have a clear enough vision of who they are in the market and how to approach the market where they really, really don't need publishers. You know, I think there's a sweet spot there for a certain kind of writer who isn't likely to get a gigantic advance from a publisher. And because that, of course, is reason one to make a deal with a publisher is if they're going to give you a crazy amount of money. But also has the savvy to really, you know, to really do all of the things that they need to do in order to, you know, to reach their best audience. Those people should publish themselves, and I know several writers who are doing a fantastic job.
Right. What you're saying is, if they know their market, and they know who they are in relation to that market,
right, and how to reach them,
and they've already gone through a certain amount of growth and development as a writer, so it may be, and their market is kind of consistently with them. What you're describing
that not entirely, not just that. Yes. Certainly, there are writers. I think this is one of the things. You know, it's one of the things that I'm seeing with a number of romance writers, for instance, is that they can actually do a better job for themselves than their publisher would do because, you know, they've established a certain level of sales consistency, and the publisher really can't or isn't interested in taking them to the next level. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, sometimes writers plateau. I mean, that happens fairly often. But those people would benefit from publishing themselves because they can basically carry their audience with them and make significantly more money doing that than selling their books to a publisher. But there's also a kind of writer who maybe is just at the sort of, you know, at the beginning of the upper end of the arc, where you know they have a few books under their belt, they understand that you know what a real book is and what a professional publication is and all of that, and they have a clear vision of the market and how to reach them, and they can actually grow themselves dramatically in a way that maybe their publisher wouldn't, just because they're not seeing them as a top of the list author. And you know, and the author themselves can treat themselves as a top of the list author. So I think, you know, there's that group of people. And then I think the other side of that is it depends on the publisher, because the what publishers have to offer, I think, is a very different set of values now than what they had to offer before. You know, put the checkbook aside. You know, assume we're not talking about authors who are going to get, you know, huge advances or gigantic marketing budgets. What the publisher has to do now is offer a suite of services that go beyond, you know, they're largely intangible, frankly. And that's one of the things that I've tried to set up with Fiction Studio is a publishing culture, that there's something about the you know, the whole publishing environment here that actually benefits the writer. You know, whether that's, you know, my relationships with you know, certain people in the industry, my relationships with certain accounts, you know, the ability to sort of, you know, steer a publication in its best fashion, which may mean, you know, this cover versus that cover, or this book next rather than this book next, or basic editorial stuff, or, you know, this price versus that price. You know, there's this entire set of acquired knowledge that a publisher who's really paying attention to the business has. And if you combine that with a real commitment to the books, I think it does offer a level of value that actually benefits a writer who doesn't feel that they could do everything on their own. You know, so I think there's a certain kind of entrepreneurial writer who absolutely, absolutely should publish themselves, and they just don't need anybody else.
Although, isn't it difficult? I mean, thinking of this from a kind of, I don't know, above the trees perspective, you know, a writer would have to be extremely self-aware in order to make these determinations. And the question always is, can a writer or any artist be absolutely certain of where they fit into this marketplace? Now, again, we're not talking about people whose commitments as artists are kind of single-mindedly focused on art and not commerce.
Right.
Because there, I think that the artist has an obligation to the art itself and will maybe override all considerations coming from the outside. Although even then, you could argue that writers need editors, artists need people to tell them when they've gone off the tracks. You know?
Sure.
But let's supposing you're a writer, you think you are the right, you think you should be publishing your own stuff, but you might be wrong. I mean, and you might be, you know, you don't necessarily know what a good book cover is like, and sometimes your own ideas get the better of you, and you'll write something that's not really great, or doesn't it, you know, and you don't understand why it's not hitting with
right.
resonating with an audience. Those, you know, there you might have to say to an author, you're going to have to learn by doing, that if it turns out self-publishing or self-directed publishing is not working, then maybe you're going to have to find somebody who can help you.
Right. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because I actually think that there may come a point where that's available on a consulting basis also. I don't know of anybody who's actually doing publishing consulting in that.
But it's similar to like being that people have put out shingles as book doctors. There would
right.
be very little to prevent someone with experience in the book business to put out a shingle saying I'm an author career consultant.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a role that agents play in some way for their clients. I mean, I suspect that agented authors actually are often talking to their agents for that kind of business and career advice. And
right.
then it puts a burden on the agents to really stay abreast of what's going on.
Which is a challenge because that hasn't been their job. You know, for the most part, agents haven't had to understand the nuances of publishing. They've had to understand the nuances of the transaction between the publisher and the author. But they haven't had to, to understand, what's going on at various booksellers or what's going on in the marketplace in terms of, consumer reaction to various, various types of writing and various techniques and things like that. That almost requires them to be something different. And, that may, in fact, turn out to be the case, because I think, in a funny way, as healthy as the business is right now, a lot of agents are selling fewer and fewer books. And, and some of that's because, many of their mid-level clients are deciding to publish themselves.
I think the role of agents, that's another discussion probably for a different, a whole other show, is the role of agents. I think clearly that is evolving as the business that they have been intermediaries for has also evolved. Mm-hmm. So, I think everybody, it's trite at this point to talk about the change in the business, but each element in the chain of supply essentially has to figure out how to play. And what we think of today may be very different from tomorrow, but, then again, you're always looking for the things that are either constant principles that you can rely on or methodologies that allow you to wrestle with that change successfully.
I
don't think that I've heard of anyone doing precisely what you're doing with Fiction Studio. But let me ask you a couple other questions. So when you principally are doing ebooks, but I think you've told me in other occasions that you also have a digital printing capability.
I mean, there's a print edition available for every book that we do.
Got it.
Because it just doesn't make sense not to. It's not hard to set up, and there are people who just simply prefer print books still.
So do you distribute those books?
We don't put them into bookstores. No, we just sell them, via online booksellers. But there have been cases. I've got a Canadian author, for instance, who has really good relationships with a number of Canadian independents, and we've distributed his book into those places. We can always distribute the book. We have, our distributor is National Book Network, and they're capable of putting a book on sale anywhere. We choose not to because I frankly don't want to deal with the returns. But the possibility is always there, and I keep looking at various benchmarks and thinking, maybe this time we'll put some more books into the market, but I haven't actually made that move yet.
So are you able or willing to share some information about your success? Are books that you're publishing selling? Are they selling well enough for you as a publisher to make money, for your authors to make enough money to be happy?
I think so. We'll see. We've published... the imprint launched in January, and we've published 12 books to date. There'll actually be 14 books published this year, but two more coming in the next few weeks. Of those 12 books, four of them have been in the Kindle Top 100. Three of those four have been in the Kindle Top 20, and a couple of others have been in the sort of 500 and above range on the Kindle list, and those numbers start adding up to decent sales. I mean, when you get into the top 20, you're talking about significant sales. And so given that there is not a lot of cost involved in getting in, the money, there are actually people making money in this process. Both the writer and I are making some money in doing this.
And the sales are the only way you make money.
The way that the way Fiction Studio is set up as a collective, essentially. This was my other my other big thing that I wanted to do with this program. I've wanted for years to do basically a writer's co-op, where everybody could share their efforts and their intelligence and their passion for their books. And pull it together, and I think this, you can see it manifested on our on our website. We have a daily blog that where all the different writers on the list just write. They just talk about what they're they feel like talking about that day. And I think it's, you know, it's a really interesting writerly thing that, you know, that sort of makes us unique again. But the idea behind that program is, you know, behind the collective aspect of it is that, you know, because it's such a low risk, low entry business, you know, if the author is capable of bringing a professional product to the market, and sometimes that means, you know, going outside for, you know, copy editing help and proofreading help and that sort of thing, you know, and packaging help and that sort of thing, that, you know, that they can take the lion's share of the income. So the only way that I make any money, I certainly don't charge anybody for anything that I do. The only way that I make any money is if the books sell. And, you know, fortunately they are, you know, so, you know, so we've had a pretty good run this first year, and, you know, we're going to do more books next year. And, you know, I actually think the nice thing about what I'm seeing is that these books keep selling. You know, they're not just selling for a moment because of some promotional trick and then go away. You know, once a book starts to work, it just continues to work.
Well, and I think the key there is the fact that you're not at the mercy of retailers putting your books out on the front of the store. That, you know, if your books are selling, they're always available online from whatever retailers that you use. This is a key transformation in the presentation of books. There are challenges in the fact that there are millions of titles available, and, you know, we know we have to search and find and discover, but when a physical bookstore could carry 100,000 titles and only a few thousand of those could be face out, there was a significant limitation in the number of books that would be visible to a person walking into a store. And since the visibility was really the driver that allowed people to buy books, other than those people who were dedicated browsers, I think that this transformation in digital over bricks and mortar is profound. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's better, because I think there are other impediments that get in the way of finding books. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that if a book is selling well, and maybe wouldn't have been well enough to be front of store in the old days, it still is going to be buzzed and talked about and passed on from person to person, and there's no problem finding the book now.
Absolutely. And a really critical corollary to that is that a book can start selling at a rapid pace at any point.
That's right.
You know, we've had, as I said, you know, we've had, you know, four top 100 Kindle books this year. None of them sold that way in their first couple of months. You know, what happened in every single case is that, you know, we kept hitting hard on reviews and getting more exposure for the books and that sort of thing. And that review exposure, you know, that the accumulation of great comments about the book, finally drove them to take off. And so that's something that we wouldn't have been able to do before. You know, we wouldn't have, there was no really effective way to platform a physical book. Because you sold it in and you spent the co-op and you got the front of the store and then you hoped everything worked in those first couple of weeks, or you didn't and you never got the shot. It's actually a part of our model. I mean, we actually don't intend, it's not like we're, you know, we would prevent people prevent a lot of people from buying the books early, but we don't think about the first couple of months on sale as being heavy traffic times for these books. You know, what's key during that time is gathering as much positive attention for the books as we possibly can, so that when consumers come to, you know, to the page at Amazon or the page at Barnes & Noble, or, you know, to Goodreads or Library Thing or whatever, that they see that people are saying really good things about that book and that it's worth their spending money on it.
So I have one last question I want to ask you about, and that is pricing. Because I think this is an issue that a lot of people are thinking about. Not enough time to give a long answer to this question, but do you have a price point that you choose for most or all books, and or do you change the pricing as a dynamic matter?
I do. You know, we tend to launch books at $10, but we tend not, once we get past that platform period, we tend to drop the price down to, you know, to $3, $4, or $5. It seems to me that the point, and this, you know, I think is a movable thing also, but the point at which readers start paying attention to the cost of a book is $3. You know, if a book is less than $3, if it sounds interesting, they're just going to buy it. They're not going to think about it at all. Over that, then they start maybe thinking about it a little bit more. And so, what I found, and I think, many publishers can attest to this, other than the major houses that are still convinced that the book should be way more expensive than that, is that $3 spot seems to be a really, really good spot in terms of launching writers and developing writers. And so a lot of our books wind up in that place eventually, but we don't start there because, because as I said, the first few months, we're not necessarily looking to drive sales as much as we are to drive acclaim.
Got it. So, I mean, do you feel that there will be a stratification of book pricing that new authors looking for a market will have lower prices kind of as a way of lowering the barrier for a potential reader, getting people to try them out. So a new writer might be at $3, where somebody with an established market might be at $6, and somebody who's really, really, really got a big market and everybody loves that person so much that they're willing to pay $9 or $10 will have the higher price. Do you feel like that may be an evolution that's coming?
Sure. And actually, there's an analog to that in the industry already. I mean, a lot of, especially with commercial fiction, a lot of writers started in mass market. And essentially that's, that $3 price point is the mass market price point. And that pattern of taking somebody from within the paperback world, there was always sort of a stratum. Taking somebody from category pricing to lead pricing to then hardcover pricing is something that I think we'll absolutely see with fiction, certainly, as we go forward, because it makes sense. Make it as easy as you possibly can for the consumer to decide they want this author. Because, again, especially if you're thinking about author rather than book, the most important thing for you to do is get the reader turned on. If you believe that what you have is a writer who is going to inspire loyalty from readers, then the most important thing you could possibly do is get people to read that writer. And you want to make it as simple as you possibly can and as painless as you possibly can for that to happen. And I do think that's something that we're seeing with our pricing, is that people are very willing to take shots on our authors, and then they become converted.
Well, it's a good story, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. I'm really hopeful that you will continue to have success.
Yeah, thank you.
And just for anybody interested, it's fictionstudio.com.
Actually, no. It's fictionstudiobooks.com.
Oh, I'm looking at fictionstudio.com.
Well, Fiction Studio, I actually have had a company called Fiction Studio for a long time. But
got it.
But fictionstudiobooks.com is the actual imprint.
Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. I think that's really important. So go to fictionstudiobooks.com. Thanks, Lou Aronica, for being on the show. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. Been really great talking to you.
Thanks, David.